Hi, I'm Anna. This is the Service Design Show, episode 173.
Hi, my name is Mark Fontaine, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Service Design Show. On this show, we explore what's beneath the surface of service design. What are those hidden and invisible things that make all the difference between success and failure to help you design great services that have a positive impact on people, business, and yes, our planet. Our guest in this episode is Anna van der Tocht, who is the lead sustainability at LiveWork. Now, when I think about physical products and sustainability, things like reducing waste, net zero, or circularity come to mind. From clothing to cars, it seems that almost every manufacturer these days is aware of their responsibility to work towards a more sustainable future. But this awareness is much less apparent when it comes to services. What is your bank or insurance provider doing to make their actual services more sustainable? And I'm not talking here about reducing the number of paper forms that they use. Well, Anna has been exploring how we can bring sustainability as a core component into our service design process. For that, we first have to understand what the quote-unquote material properties are of the services that we're working with. So for example, when you're designing a product, you might use a lighter material to reduce the energy required for transportation. But what's lightweight mean when you're designing a service? Are there similar concepts? Spoiler alert, yes, there are. But as you'll hear, there are also still many unknowns and unanswered questions around this topic, and that makes it so interesting. Now is really the time to start having this conversation in our community and with our clients. So if you stick around till the end of this episode, you'll have a much better understanding of what sustainability means in the context of services, how we need to rethink our own practice in order to design these services, and how do you get your clients excited to invest in them? If you enjoy exploring forward-thinking topics like this more frequent and more in-depth with fellow in-house service design professionals, pay close attention because the following message might just be for you. I'm currently taking new applications for the Circle community. If you haven't heard about the Circle yet, let me quickly fill you in. 2 years ago, I created the Circle as a place where in-house service design professionals could meet, share experiences, and learn from each other. Inside the Circle, we host multiple events each month to address the nitty-gritty stuff of what it means to actually do service design inside large organizations. Yes, the messy side of our work that you somehow don't read about in books or hear at conference. Recently, we addressed topics like the relationship between change management and service design, the most effective ways to embed service design inside an organization, and how to get buy-in for your work. And every month, we're adding at least 3 new topics to this list. What's unique about the conversations that take place inside the Circle is that they aren't just philosophical discussions. Members bring tangible examples from their work into their community, so you get to see how other professionals do their work, which struggles they run into, and how they overcome them. Every conversation inside the Circle is based on lived experiences. So if you are an in-house service design professional who wants to have meaningful conversations about things that matter with people who care just as much as you do, then you'll feel right at home in this community. Head over to servicedesignshow.com/circle to learn how you can apply and become a member. So that's servicedesignshow.com/circle, and you'll also find the link in the show notes of this episode. That about wraps it up for the introduction. Now it's time to sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation with Anna van der Tocht. Let the show begin. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Thank you. Hi, Mark.
Hi. It's always awkward to do these conversations in English when you're speaking to somebody from the Netherlands. It always takes a switch. Nice to have somebody again from this beautiful country. Anna, super excited to talk about a topic that hasn't been on the show a lot, but you have done a lot of thinking around. I think it will be very inspiring and thought-provoking maybe. But before we dive into that, could you maybe give a short introduction into who you are and what you do these days?
Yes, thanks, Mark. Thanks. I'm Anna. Anna van der Tocht. I work at LiveWork Studio, the Rotterdam office, and I'm our lead sustainability. It's a relatively new role at LiveWork. We've been having a lot of conversations over the last couple of years, especially during Corona. This really fired away, and we all felt so passionate about climate change and about the planet and about preserving it so that it stays as diverse and beautiful as it is today. And we felt, what is our role in that? What's design's role in that? And at a certain point, we started building our thinking around that, and we started to really make it actionable. Like, what should service designers do? How can they help out in our transformation to a more sustainable future? And that went really well and really hit off. And at a certain point, we thought, no, we should really take this seriously. So now I'm the first lead of sustainability, which basically means that I coordinate across our clients and projects to, really introduce that fourth lens of sustainability to feasibility, desirability, and viability, and make sure that we update all our tools and our thinking so that it includes that, and that we do more work that actively contributes to changing the world.
Congratulations on that role, and congratulations on sort of pushing this boundary. Now, this is already a very interesting teaser of what's coming up later, but Anna, we also have a sort of a lightning round, five lighthearted questions to get to know you as a person next to the professional. I've added some new questions today, and you haven't prepared for them. Now, just the first thing that comes to your mind, we won't dive yes. into them deeper, but are you ready?
I am so ready.
All right. Go ahead. What book or books are you reading, if any, at this moment?
I just bought The Value of a Whale, I think it's called, but I haven't started reading it yet, but I heard very good reviews. It's about, looking at the value of different, things on Earth. So it's very much connected to what I just spoke about. But I'm also just a normal human being that loves fiction. So I just finished a bit of fantasy books, and I'm reading a book that's called Everything I Know About Partying, Booze, or whatever. And then it ends with Everything I Know About Love. So all directions, fiction, nonfiction. I love it all.
Well, we'll add a reading list to the show notes. Anna, what's always in your fridge?
What's always in my fridge? I think that would be some tahini. I really like making hummus, and I really like tahini. I'm such a sucker for all Ottolenghi foods. So definitely tahini. Mm. That's always there.
All right. Yeah. All right. If you could have a superpower, which superpower would you like to have?
Thank you for asking that question. It used to always be flying, I think, like most people, but I recently changed it to being able to understand and speak all languages in the world. Mm. That would definitely be my superpower. I would love to go out and just be able to be curious and be able to really live in that curiosity by having the ability to speak all languages.
Nice. This is a new one. What is your go-to karaoke song?
Ooh. I think it would be New York from Alicia Keys, and the Alicia Keys version. Yeah.
Cool. And final question, which is a tradition here on the show. Do you recall the first time you heard or learned about service design?
I don't recall the exact moment. I do know that it was somewhere during my master's in Delft, strategic product design master's. And it was immediately a moment that I thought, ooh, that's quite interesting, because I was used to focusing on industrially produced products and not necessarily on services. And it really tickled something. I thought, oh, that's quite interesting to look at it in a broader sense. And then it really caught my attention actually due to a television documentary, which most Dutch people might probably know. It's VPRO Tegenlicht. And it was all about this architect, Thomas Rau, that explained that more products should be offered as a service if we would want to shift to a more circular world. So that was really when I thought, whoa, services, we need to do something with that. Mm.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you for sharing that background story. Let's transition into the topic of this episode. I, of course, sort of in our prep call and prep emails asked you, like, what is the central theme? And you summarized this as a sustainable service industry, right? Now, that sounds super interesting. And I would like to understand, first of all, where are we today as a service industry, as in, it's sort of the topic maybe sort of implies that the current service industry isn't sustainable. How do you view that? What is your take?
Good question. So maybe to define it a little bit, because I think what I think is important is that we're not talking about the product industry. Even products as a services are excluded from this realm, I would say. So really, like financial services, insurances. All the typical services, so the service industries, that they usually don't have a product that has very tangible materials going into it, that has a very tangible energy use during either production or during use or during waste phase. So sustainability is very much seen as a material realm. So it's easier to see how that applies to product and manufacturing industries. And it's a little bit more difficult for service industries because they have offices as well, but that's not really their biggest impact. Their biggest impact is kind of they have a lot of influence in the infrastructure of our world, and not the physical infrastructure, but the less tangible infrastructure. So at a certain point, we started to think about what is sustainable insurance, for example. That was actually the trigger for us to start thinking about that. And we realized that currently there's a big focus on net zero across the board. So not only for service industries, but basically for everything. And when you look a little bit into the concept of net zero, it is a scientific concept that looks at, basically takes one measurement as a proxy for how we're doing. It's not the only proxy. If you look into what climate scientists have been saying or have been looking at, they usually don't take it as the only proxy for how healthy our planet is. But for some reason, it really got caught attention, and it kind of got a lot of attention and pull and momentum. So we see a lot of companies pledging net zero, which is really good because it's awesome that companies are considering the planet at all. But net zero focuses very much on what the world shouldn't look like, right? So it focuses on a world without carbon. So it describes a quality that shouldn't be there. And whereas for manufacturing companies, there are also other concepts like circularity or regenerative that describe the desired state. That desired state doesn't really exist for the service industries. So when we started to think about what does a sustainable insurance look like, we realized, oh, there's so little defined. So that's kind of how we thought, oh, that's quite interesting that there's so little understanding of that.
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack here. And so we all get that there are manufacturers and they use materials and ingredients and they extract things from the earth. And then at some point they create waste if we throw this stuff away. And we wanna reduce waste. We wanna reduce the carbon footprint. I think with a bike manufacturer, car manufacturer, anything that's, like you said, a tangible product, we get that. But then we come to services, and you mentioned insurance. I'd like to think of an even more simple example, like maybe a barber or a massage, something simple like that. How does sustainability play a role there? And I was thinking, okay, so what is what is waste in that environment? And I know you said it's not just about eliminating waste, because that's just reducing what's already there, and that's not per se describing a desired state. But maybe we can talk about both. Like, first of all, is there waste in services? Is there waste in services? And if so, what is that?
So I think this is already super difficult to answer. And already the examples that you said, like a barber versus insurance versus a bank versus public transport, they all have a very physical and material components, but they're vastly different. And yes, they all use energy that is probably either green or not. Yes, they all have obsolete products. So at a barber, you might think of the hair that drops down on the ground, or I don't know, the plastic in which the hair products enter the salon. So yes, you could say they services have waste. I think that's a very simple answer. So you could look at their carbon footprint, you could look at their material usage, you could look at their waste streams. So in a sense, that is exactly the same as products. But quite often, services have a influence on how the world works. So if maybe the barber and the massage parlor are not the best examples for that, but public transport or financial institutions, they do have actually quite a big influence on how the world works, on how material can flow. And that happens almost at different abstraction levels, I would say. So with public transport or with transport infrastructure, you could say, oh, whether there is a way for me to go to Dublin without using a plane has a big influence to how much people use, how much people fly, and therefore has an influence on the material impact of the world. But for banks, that's even different, right? So where do banks invest? Are there ways for them to play an explicit role in what is successful and what is not? So it's quite interesting that they have this big influence on the material impact of the world without that their office space or without their own waste to be the biggest component of that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. And this makes it a lot super complicated, because but this also goes, I think, for a product manufacturer. To which extent are you responsible for, I don't know, how the raw materials are extracted from the earth? Like, at some point, and I guess with a service provider, this also goes, like, how far does your influence reach? Interesting questions, to be honest. Like, maybe another angle we can take at this is, again, the distinction between products and services. With products, you sort of know what the what is the word that I'm looking for, like the knobs are that you can dial. You can
the leverage points.
Yeah, well, you can see how and where your sort of raw materials are sourced from, if that's from a well maintained source. Like, I've bought a jacket and there are tons of labels that the fur, or what is it, the goose feathers are sourced from a good place. Yeah. Like, stuff like that. So those are knobs that you as a product designer can turn to be, I don't know, more sustainable. Yeah. Have you found similar knobs that also apply to the service industry, or is it so different in each sector that it's really hard to identify these levers, knobs, dials?
I think they might be there. Like, there are, just like in products there are patterns, in services there are also patterns. We can see how a shoe is very different from a coffee machine, but in some but they also have similarities in how they are produced or used. And therefore, you can see patterns in how you can maybe turn those knobs that you just mentioned. And I suspect that might be the same for services. At the same time, I do think that the service industries, they have a very different role in every, yeah, they each have their own role, and that role is so powerful. They have such an influence on how things work in the world. So for example, I'm going to come back to the insurance example quite a lot because we thought about it a lot. Whereas a lot of people say, oh, our government should force us to do this or that, or should force companies to think about sustainability. Actually, insurers, they are not government, but they have quite some pull in. They can just tell a business, we will not insure you unless you make sure that your facilities are flood proof, for example, because otherwise the risk is too high for us. So they actually do have a role to play potentially in getting us to a more sustainable future. Obviously, the whole service would change would they start more actively using that, because the whole interaction between an insurance company and an insured business would radically change. So the service design would also change because all of a sudden, I don't know, you have to negotiate about how flood-proof you should be in the areas where your facilities are. But there's all of a sudden a very different start of the service and this of the service design.
So, yeah, it's good to come back to this insurance example. And I'm just going to, out of curiosity, try to dig into the differences. And maybe there aren't that many differences. Maybe that might be what we explore here. But how is this different from a product manufacturer that says to its suppliers, like, I'm only going to use your raw materials if the animals that you use are treated well. So a product manufacturer like IKEA, like they have a lot of influence on sustainability, for instance.
Yes. So if you're talking about their suppliers, yes. But if you're talking about their clients, not so much. And that's different, because IKEA, if you buy, I don't know, an IKEA couch, it would be quite weird if the person at checkout says, you can only buy this couch if you promise to recycle it, or if you promise to blah. Maybe that will happen in the future. Maybe we will come up with certain new business models in which that happens, but that radically changes the business model, probably from a product to a service. And I think that where manufacturing companies are not changing the interaction with their customers radically yet, some are, yes, if you think about sharing or leasing or those kind of things, that's different for service industries, where from the start you're in this kind of, services are kind of co-created, right? It's like a co-creative act between the service provider and the service customer. So you can see that that has a bigger impact.
Yeah. And that's a very good distinction, it's the relationship with the customer and not per se the suppliers, because in a service, like you said, it's co-created and there is no stock or stockpile. That makes a lot of sense that there is a difference, and you can question if what the role is of a service provider towards its customers, like as a restaurant or as a massage salon, or as an insurance. Sure, can you neglect or force your customers to a certain type of behavior, or stimulate a certain type of behavior, or attract a certain type of behavior, right? From the end consumer, customer, that's the whole thing here, right?
Yeah, and I like the way you say it. Like, the fact that value is co-created in a service means that if you want to make that value more sustainable, you for sure need to do that with your customers, where manufacturers can already do a lot just making sure that it is created with recycled materials, whatever, without involving their customers in it. Obviously, there's a case for them involving their customers in it as well, but they have more control over the product that they send out than service providers do.
Well, yes and no, because a service provider, like, they have the full control because it's co-created sort of in the moment. So you are always active and engaged as a service provider, while as a product company, you sell the product and then it's out of your hands. So you have no control over that.
True.
What do you feel it's currently missing in order to, you know, to get toward this more sustainable vision on services?
Yeah, so I think that, yeah, that's why I started with the net zero example. Net zero is about this material world. It's about less carbon. Whereas you see that in the examples that we already discussed, that sustainability for service industries might also be about what role they take. So that's not material. That's about this immaterial element of how you help to restructure the world so the material elements can be more sustainable, if that makes sense. So, for example, obviously, also service providers should look at their own operation. They should also reduce the impact of their own offices. They should reduce the impact of their own travel, etc. So that's not what I'm talking about here. But they have this opportunity to have a bigger impact because they have a certain role in society. And that's not described at this moment. There's no desired state for their role in facilitating this transition to a more sustainable world. Whereas for manufacturing, that is a bit more described. It's about circularity, about regenerative thinking. So there is like this future state that they can see, like, oh yeah, if we would build towards that, then probably we are in a future state where we want to be. Whereas for service industries, that's less defined. And you could say maybe it's as simple as they have to help facilitate the manufacturers of this world to become circular or regenerative. Maybe it's as simple as that, but maybe it's not. I don't know yet. For sure, it is undefined at the moment.
You've done a lot of thinking about this, and have you found is there a good reason why this is still undefined? Because services, like, it's not that they were invented yesterday. They've been around quite a long time. So you would think that people have already put some effort into creating a future state or a desired state. Why is it still lacking?
Good question. Well, I think that, climate scientists would probably say, well, it's not only lacking there, even though that there the desired state exists for the more material world. Companies are also not there yet. We're just very late. And so you could say maybe it's just because we have been taking it too slow. And then I think the difficult thing for sustainability in general is that it's so interdisciplinary because it has to change across industries, across organizations. And it's super difficult to understand how. And then it really started from this understanding of systems on Earth, which was very much rooted in the material world, seeing how more carbon entered the atmosphere and how that is actually heating up. So that's a very material world. You can measure it. You can sometimes even see it. So as the whole thinking started in that material world, that's probably also why the thinking evolved faster there than in the immateriality of our society. And I do think that transition thinking, so you have, I'm actually not sure what the field is called, but there's quite a lot of thinking about transitions and how you bring about transition and how transitions have taken place in the past. That is probably a first look into that more immaterial way of thinking. Or system thinking is another way of looking at it. But these are fields that, well, at least in the projects that we come across, haven't permeated the industries as much as circularity or regenerativity has done that in manufacturing.
Super interesting. Again, I'm just it's great to have a beginner's mind here and being able to ask all the stupid questions. The distinction with products is so helpful here, at least for me. And you mentioned that they deal with materials, and then when you think about carbon, it makes a lot of sense. Like and I was thinking while you were sharing this, like, okay, so products are about carbon. What are services about? And services are, of course, about experiences, relationships. Is that maybe an area where we should take our sustainability thinking into? So, I don't know, how do we experience nature? What is our connection to the outside world and to, I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud here.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful thinking, actually. I think for sure this should be a part of it. We worked with a couple of car manufacturers looking into electrical vehicles, and it was quite interesting how we assume that the experience for driving a fueled car is the same as for a electric vehicle, where, our assumption is actually that experience is probably different, and that if you design for it, it's even more different. If I would buy an electric car, I would want to know at what point if at a certain point I drove enough kilometers with it so that that at that point my choice was indeed more sustainable than a car that uses fuel, I would want to know that. So that's a very explicit touch point that I think should be in there. I don't know if that is actually true for people that drive those, but I can imagine that there is an experiential bit of that. So that's a very explicit example of how the digital services or the whole services around a car should be different. But I do think that experience in general might have to be different. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's the area where we have a lot of opportunity. As in, again, what are sustainable experiences, or how do we? What does circularity mean for experiences? Or I don't know, what does sustainability? Super interesting. Now, you work with tons of companies, and you're sort of pioneering this this idea, this concept. When you share this with them, what is the typical response?
Well, I wouldn't share it exactly as we talked about it just now, because it feels very vague to them if I would do that. But for example, with insurers, we have talked about, okay, this is what will change for you for sure. Because insurance have, for example, also have risks in climate change. So when we share it with them, we usually think about what is their mental framework. So for banks and insurers, they think a lot about risk and risk management. And then we think, okay, how is a climate that is changing influencing their risks and how they manage that? Well, climate change actually has quite some risks, right? So that's usually then the starting point, thinking from their frame of reference and then reframing this topic from that same frame of reference. To take that as an example, we all saw that the flooding in the Netherlands and in Germany and in Belgium caused a lot of damages and on quite a big scale. So they had not only did that cost them a lot of money, but it was also operationally quite difficult to get all those people reimbursed and get all those businesses back up and running in a time frame that makes sense. So there's quite some struggles for them as well. And then, especially insurers, they usually have quite a community history. So the origin of many insurers is a couple of farmers that collaborated because if one farmer's crop would fail, then the other would pitch in to keep that farmer alive. So they usually feel quite some social responsibility as well. So they see this risk, they see the social responsibility of making sure that people that live in areas where there's that are more flooding prone, they should also be protected. So they see there's quite some things that they see happening and that they care about either because it has financial consequences or because it clashes with their value system. And then we start to think about, okay, so if that is for sure their realm and they care about that, how might they change? How might the world of insurance change if they would want to do this more sustainably? And then, for example, what I said before, can they negotiate with their customers? Hey, we do want to insure you, but can you make sure that your house or your business is flood-proof for floodings up to 1 meter high? I don't know. And by the way, can you also make sure that if you flood-proof it, that you then do that in a, with sustainable materials? And then you see, okay, that's all of a sudden a different service, because then you're looking together at the situation of this customer or business. So there's this whole assessment that wasn't there before. So all of a sudden their whole service would change. So that's usually how we kind of start the conversation and say, we think that if you, that this is happening for you for sure, if we do a first exploration of what that might mean for what your services would potentially change into, we can already see that, that that's very different and that people will not all of a sudden adopt that. And that's how we start the conversation. So we don't start a conversation with saying, you lack a vision on sustainable services, because, yeah, it won't get us anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, of course. It makes, this is the first rule of service design. Don't talk about service design. You talk about the things that matter to the company. And eventually, in the end, it's money in a for-profit company that matters, and values, like you said, the values that they have and they want to stay true to. But it opens up doors where they can see how being more sustainable actually helps their business model. So that's the opening you're looking for. Now, I like the example where you said an insurer can, for instance, have a negotiation with its customer about being flood-proof and doing that in a way that doesn't harm nature, or it's actually good to nature, like, I don't know, increasing biodiversity. I'm just, again, thinking out loud here. Do you have maybe a few more examples that you thought through that could be inspiring to paint a picture here?
Yeah, so for insurance, we for sure thought about it most actively. But I can imagine that for either, for example, we had a conversation with a net provider. So not the energy provider, but the company that, or the, yeah, the organization that makes sure that there's an electricity network. They are also a service provider because they make sure that if you start a business in the middle of nowhere, you have the right to say, connect me to the energy network. But they have a big problem with the current state because the network is changing in such a fast pace. Many people are installing solar panels or things that weren't there before, and all of a sudden the needs of a network in this one little area change radically, because all of a sudden everybody has solar panels. So not only should it give out energy, but it should also take in energy, and the amounts are of a very different magnitude. So that's just one example. And then also they have more fluctuating energy, right? So solar and wind energy, they are less consistent than our old energy sources. So they have this very physical problem, but it has impact on how they service their clients, because they see, oh, wow, we want to service our clients. We want to make sure that everybody that wants energy has access to it. And at the same time, it's getting more and more difficult for us to provide that access. And up until now, they've been looking into, yeah, mostly price dynamics to change this. So can you use price to influence when and how people use energy, but it isn't enough. So then it's you then all of a sudden there's a wonderful problem space that as a service designer you can put your teeth in and think about. So how would that negotiation or that interaction with that customer change? How can you kind of co-create a system with your customers that makes it easier to balance those energy stocks? Is that another good example?
Yeah, I can totally see how this access the service to be able to access the energy grid, because that's what you're getting. You're getting that as a service, and then you need a physical infrastructure, but that's not what we're talking about. So how would that conversation go? What changes? We don't need to have the solution here, but just like what could potentially change? What are some scenarios in how this conversation, this negotiation, this co-creation with customers could potentially change?
Yeah, I don't have the answer for that, but I would love to do a project in which we go around all those different types of energy users and really understand, like we usually do in design research, right? Really understand what are their needs, what are their accessing needs, and can we, I don't know, are there, maybe we come up with personas, but different needs that can be treated in a different way, or behavioral archetypes. Maybe people don't need energy all the time, they need it, but they do need to know upfront when they can and when they can't. I don't know. I think there's a lot that we haven't thought of yet. And I think every service designer listening can see how the design research for this challenge would be so, yeah, full of meat and so interesting.
And we haven't talked or addressed the idea or the notion that service design plays a role here. What do you feel is the role of the service design field and service design professionals in this whole conversation?
Well, what I've always loved about service design is that it is a more than a product design field or any of the other design fields. I would say it thinks about kind of we don't have physical materials to play with. We have the organization to play with. That's kind of our design material. So it has always been our role to kind of be a facilitator of a co-creation between all those different organizational departments and teams and bringing it together and make their whole world revolve around the customer. And I think that is so relevant in this space because having a ESG or sustainability team that thinks through all the whole carbon footprint of a company is not enough here. You need to actually change some ways that the world works. And so many different disciplines, so many different people need to be involved in that and need to co-create and need to use their expertise and together get to this desired state in which all those different teams, silos, and kind of that they're all orchestrated to this new solution. And I think that is our superpower. Yes, we are super human centric. And that is, I think, what we pride ourselves the most with. But I think what we sometimes forget is that we are kind of the wonderful orchestrators of change. And I really think that we have a big role to use that skill here as well.
And if you think about this, what would help to accelerate the adoption of this way of thinking in our field? What is what is holding us back? I don't know. I'm not sure if anything is holding us back rather than just not knowing or thinking about this. But what could help to accelerate the adoption of this forward lens?
I think what is holding us back is that we feel we are uneducated to talk about this, that we are afraid to contribute to greenwashing. But the interesting thing is that we are also no IT experts. We're also no HR experts. We are also no digital experts. We're no call center experts. But for some reason, we're very comfortable to invite all those disciplines to our workshops. So I think we should be more comfortable to invite the sustainability experts to our workshops and to our processes. And we don't have to be the experts on sustainability to create sustainable services. We're also no business experts, but we still make sure that our services are viable, right? So I think that is kind of a mindset shift that we are have been starting to make, but where we're lacking behind because we are a bit afraid of coming in too powerful, of saying things in spaces where we don't feel experts. But I hope that this will change and that people, service designers, would see I don't have to know exactly how much carbon this service emits for me to still invite sustainability experts into the co-creation process and to create a sustainable service.
I'm curious. So it's maybe an imposter syndrome problem here, but I'm also curious. We have been selling the making services more human agenda for a while now. Like that's the thing we're advocating for. We're saying we need to make businesses more human. Services need to be more focused around people. That's already a very big challenge, and we've been pioneering that, we've been evangelizing that, and it took us a while up to till the moment that clients started create that demand was created. At first there was no demand, we had to create demand. Is like with this sustainability thing, it's super important, but are we waiting right now for clients to come with the question to us and then we can act upon it? And does it maybe feel like a too big of a hassle or burden to now also start advocating for sustainable services next to more human services? I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Good question. I sometimes think of our work as kind of business is kind of looking at its own operation, looking down at its own body, and then we invite them to look up and to look at their customer and to see their customer and then relate what they see there to what they see if they look at themselves. And I feel that this is almost like the next step in then saying, maybe you should open up even more and not only look at the one right in front of you, which is your direct customer, but also at the world around that and invite that. But it does feel like that human centricity bit that we've been introducing is a very good first step of inviting companies to look beyond their own realm. So yes, I do think that you're right. It took us a while to be recognized as experts for even doing this. It won't happen overnight that we're invited to also do that last bit. I think that is completely correct. But I do think that we're seeing more and more that companies do feel this. So for example, a company that wants their products to be circular, thinking, oh, but how do we then facilitate our customers to bring back their products? How do we then facilitate our customers to repair their products? Maybe we should do some service design for that. So that's kind of already the first step, right, into stretching from customer to more than customer. Yeah. To planet centricity, maybe even.
I like if somebody's listening to the podcast, they have missed the sort of the physical cues in your story. But I like going from looking down to looking up to looking wide. And I was going full circle on our conversation here, because when we apply this way of thinking to our own practice, we as service design professionals are service providers. Right, we're not selling products. So what does sustainable service design look like, or more sustainable service design look like? And one of the things could just be that we challenge ourselves to have this conversation with the clients that we work for. So are we inviting our clients to have a conversation about looking wide next to just looking up? And that could be a sign of a more sustainable service design practice. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Yeah, like we come in and we say, oh, this is how we do blueprints. We have the customer at the top and underneath we have the operation and we have business. So we already have desirability, viability, and feasibility in our blueprints. But why don't we also say, and we add sustainability to it as well, they have never seen a blueprint before. They don't know which layers it should have. I think it is partly about that. And it is also about being a bit more bold and saying, hey, there's quite some human challenges in transforming to sustainability. We know humans, we know organizations. Maybe we have a role to play. It might be a little bit less, it might be a little bit of a stretch for us to use those exact skills in areas where it's not a very clear start-to-end service, but still, it's human challenges that organizations have to cater for. That's kind of what we excel at. So I think it's both.
Again, I feel like we're going full circle here, because at the start you mentioned like thinking about the role service providers have. And again, we are service providers, so which role do we take on? And addressing this topic is just one of the roles we already could very easily take on to have this conversation. I wanna sort of try to wrap up and head towards the end of our conversation. I'm sure that there are a lot of questions that are unanswered, but if you could pick one and sort of maybe invite somebody who's listening right now to think with us, like, what is the big question that you would like the community to spend some mental effort on?
I liked kind of two questions that came along in this episode. Like the one that you said, what does a sustainable experience look like? I think that's definitely one that I would like us to all think about. And then the second is inviting a bit of system thinking, which we already do because organizations are kind of small systems. And obviously system thinking is a bit of a bigger field, but kind of thinking about sustainability doesn't only have this materiality, it is also making the world work differently. And then inviting people to think about that. How should it work differently? And what is the role of services in restructuring how the world works? That's, I think, the two questions that I would love for everyone to think about and to share and to talk about
together. Yeah, it will be awesome. And I invite the community to absolutely do so. And my sort of final question here is, if you would listen to this episode, or somebody's listening to this episode and they've made it all the way here, what is the one thing you hope that they will take out of this?
One thing I hope that they will take out of this is that it's okay to think about it, that you're not greenwashing just by thinking about it, and that it is scary to think about it, but that it's completely okay, and that you can talk about it, make mistakes, and think about how we can incorporate it in our work.
Thanks a lot for sharing this, Anna.
Thank you, Mark.
Super interesting. For me, a lot of unexplored, uncharted territory, a lot of stupid questions to be asked, especially from Maya, trying to understand what this could be, and actively exploring and prototyping as we speak. So thank you for offering me the space to pick your brain here, and I hope that we'll hear a lot more about this topic in the coming months, years ahead.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much for inviting me and for being comfortable with entering this confusing space.
A huge thanks to Anna for coming on the show to share her perspective with us, especially considering that there are still so many unanswered questions. I hope this got you excited to help shape the future of our practice. Finally, as I said at the start, don't forget to check out the Circle community, the place where you can connect with and learn from some of the smartest professionals in our field. Think of it as an inspiring conference, but spread out over the entire year rather than packed into frantic days. So if you're an in-house service design professional who wants to grow their practice, be challenged, and have some fun, I encourage you to join us in the Circle. There is an application process to become a member of this community, so if you'd like to know if you qualify, head over to servicedesignshow.com/circle for all the details. The link is also in the show notes of this episode. My name is Mark Fontaine, and I want to thank you for spending a part of your day with me. It's an absolute honor and pleasure, please keep making a positive impact, and I'll catch you very soon in a brand new episode of The Service Design Show. See you then.